Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to bring you As Above, So Below with Astrid. Greetings and welcome, Astrid. How are you this evening?
Greetings, Hercules. A pleasure to be with you as always. And tonight I am so proud to say that we are having a former speaker with us again, Dr. Catherine Cortides.
Awesome.
Who is an author who has
Hello.
Done so much with her life. Dr. Cortides, are you here?
Yes, I am. Hello, Astrid. Nice to hear your voice.
What a pleasure to have you on again.
Hello, Hercules. It's nice to be here again.
It's nice to
Wonderful.
Have you. Katerina, right?
Can you hear me okay, though? Let me just switch ears.
Okay. This might be better.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
That's a lot better.
Okay.
Yes. And it is always a pleasure to have you on. Your illustrious career is just amazing. You have done the journey of both the private sector, the public sector, and I'd just like to do a very short overview. I know we went into some of this the first time you were on, but just for those that may be new listeners, you have your PhD in physical chemistry. You were involved with the private sector and industry. You did original research. You developed new technologies, traveled all over the U.S., Canada, Europe, Russia, the Far East. You taught at universities. You have quite a few masters under your belt. Am I not correct?
That is indeed correct. I kept myself
busy. It amazes me, Catherine, that you managed to have a family as well as do all this. Talk about being a fulfilled person.
I've been blessed with two wonderful sons, both of which are young adults now, and it's hard to imagine. They are just wonderful in the sense that they're there for us if we need anything, and they've each decided on, chosen their careers. One is in finance and the other one's in law enforcement. And they're starting out and they're excited and passionate about what they do.
And that's the key, having passion in what you do. And I find it so amazing that you were able to transfer the passion that you had in the private sector and move it into the public sector. And besides teaching at universities, you also were very involved with the public schools. Are you still in the public school system?
Not completely, more part-time.
But you're still involved.
But I'm still involved, very much involved. It partly because of the writing. The writing has taken off for me, and I've decided to
sure.
allocate much more time to the writing. And it's something
right.
I've always wanted to do and enjoy it tremendously.
And you did do technical writing as well. So
yes,
this is another carryover.
Yes.
This is probably the love of your heart, doing the fictional history. And you're also involved with your church. You're a lector. You're a Eucharistic minister. You're involved with the choir. And I'm sure quite a few other things related to the – I think you said something about confirmation practice as well, as confirmation studies.
Yeah, I've been involved with that. Privilege of teaching young children their first sacraments, second graders. It was such a, and then also the confirmation children as well. So it's been a wonderful experience to be able to do that. And in fact, I've been doing that for 22 years, actually.
Wow.
Teaching at the church.
That's
so
amazing.
It's something I like to be involved in, and I like to be active in any way I can for the community. And that's something I look forward to continuing to do for as long as I can.
Wonderful. And you've been a fiction writer for how long now?
A year and a half. And I've published 5 books in that year and a half. So
I find that so totally amazing. And the very first book, and I love the fact that you link your books together, trilogies, and that
yeah,
they continue. The first book was Josette. Can you talk a little bit about how that started?
Well, Josette started a very long time ago, when I was about 17, just about turned 17 years old. I had been writing short stories since I was probably in middle school, and it was about when I was 17 I decided to write my first novel. And I outlined the novel and wrote the first three chapters and had a good idea of what I wanted the book to tell, the story I wanted it to tell. It was about a young woman at 25 who was was reflecting upon her life. And what happened is life happened. I got involved with my career and my family and never really went back to writing, always wanted to. And then, of course, the pandemic hit, and I thought about what I wanted to do with my life when I grew up and decided to finish the book shortly thereafter. And Josette was the first, and then people came to me that read the book, they liked it, and they wanted to know more about her love interest, which was Daniel. So that brought out the second book, which is called Daniel, which was based on his life. And it takes him from birth all the way up to the same point when he meets Josette. And then finally my husband said, you know, you should maybe write about them once they do meet and get back together, get together. And I thought, okay, that sounds interesting. I'll think about that. And the third book, which just was released actually about a week ago, is called Josette and Daniel, and that takes them through their lives together. It begins with Josette at 95 years old, and she's looking back on her life. Her memories of her past come forward. She remembers her relationship with Daniel and how they met when they were students at Juilliard, and then it portrays their life and connection throughout their lifetime, over six decades, and brings them through talking about their families and allows their relationship to blossom over all those years. And basically, the story continues on about their experiences together.
Well, I just love the fact that it's a trilogy. And more so than that, mm-hmm. I really enjoy the fact that the story is being told in three different ways.
Correct.
One from his
perspective.
And one from hers, and then their life merged together. You know, seeing the what encompassed their life together. So I find that just so nice because in our minds, all interactions we are thinking all day long, and we think in terms of from our ego and how we perceive things. And there's always not just two sides of the story, but there's the overview, you know, the factual aspect. So they're hearing these stories from her point of view and her perspective of what is considered factual, but more so the emotional aspects and the major landmarks of her life, and the same with him. And then to see it put down as like the bird's eye view of watching it all integrate together, I find so fascinating. You know, it makes the story even more enjoyable. You know, I think of all those triptych icons and how you have, you know, the visual stories, and then you have this presentation of these characters that I have to say are so well written, because you don't just tell a story. You are laying visual pictures with your words. And I will get into that as a follow-up later with your father's stories. I can see you definitely inherited some aspects of your father's writing, which is such a tribute to him, because that is also done with your dad's stories as well. But, yeah, I find the Josette and Daniel story, which I have not obtained as of yet, I'm getting that. That's in the mail. I'm looking forward to reading that because I want to see the bird's eye view of the whole entire story. not that just their perspective, you know. And it's a continuation, yes, but just that bird's eye view. I think that's so magnificent to see that. And you had to have such great pleasure, like, finishing that story. Do you think this is it? Will there be anything else? I understand now they're like, you know, the life is past, and is there anything else that you will do with their series, or is that it? Is it just the triptych?
Well, I wanted to make this sort of the third book, just the story of Josette and Daniel. I wanted it to be sort of an ending.
Okay, so that's going to be it. Listeners,
yeah.
That's it. So enjoy it fully. And
it's basically a tale of love, loss, and the enduring power of relationships. And I want the reader to be basically immersed and invested in these characters and their future together. And that's why that has to come, bring the whole tale to an end. That's kind of how I envision that third book, to kind of bring all of it together until that end. But even in the very last paragraph, and I won't read the last paragraph, it's a surprise, there's still more. Okay.
So that makes me very, very excited to get that book and read it and complete it.
I forewarn you, the last book is 586 pages long. So it's a
weird experience of reading, you know, the art of history, the history of art. Remember that book? That book is like huge. Majors, it was amazing. So and then of course we've had some books that just, you know, the philosophy books that went on and on. But when I have to say, as I read your books, I get so engrossed with them that I can't put them down. In the sense that, I have a task to do. Do I really have to do it? I really need to see what happens next and how this plays out. It's very hard to put that down. I did that with the Price of Passion. We'll get to your dad's stories in a bit. The same thing. You know, once I start reading them, it's very hard for me to put them down because you become it's even hard to say the right word for it, but they own you after a while. You start getting involved with them. You know them. They are so familiar to you. And it isn't a matter of reading the next chapter. It's a matter of finding out these important aspects of their lives that makes you want to go on and on.
But that's the best thing that can happen to any writer, is to have the readers feel exactly that way, and to have your book to be a page turner, meaning that you want to keep reading because you want to know what's going to happen next to these characters. You've basically invested into those characters.
You become invested.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Very much
and
so.
So that's what your hope is as a writer, is to be able to bring that out in whatever you produce. And thank you. That's a wonderful thing to say. It really is for a writer.
Well, now I have to say, I have books that I'll read. I'm like, okay, enough of this. I'll put this down. I'll pick that up another day. But not so. You know, what I've read so far, I have been so immersed in the characters. And it's not just that. I find that your books are very sensory-oriented, so that all of your senses are involved. You know, the descriptions are amazing. You know these characters, and not just them, but you know the extended family. You know all the surrounding aspects that are important to that person. So, yeah, you definitely become invested in the characters and their story.
You want to give a 360 sort of view of the individual, of the protagonist,
right?
Because the idea here is that they're influenced by their environment and the people they interact with. So the person they develop and become over time is because of those relationships, and that's why you want to bring those in and show their relevance to this individual, the protagonist. So both Josette and Daniel had positive experiences in their life, but they also had negative experiences. And all of those come into play to formulate who they're going to become ultimately. And, right,
and the choices that they make based upon the positive and negative. That's always the amazing thing. What choices are they going to make in, based upon the experiences they have? And so many things determine that. It's never just one thing. As educators, you and I both know, you know, we've seen different aspects in our students, you know, and the choices that are made, and you ponder what can you do to bring them to fruition and make their life meaningful and find pleasure in what they're doing and purpose in their life,
right.
Most definitely. So, yeah, now I'm very excited to get that final book. Catherine, I really am. And, of course, you know, before we can talk about The Price of Passion, we have to go over the AJK anthology a bit. And if you could just mention a little bit about how it started, you know, for our listeners and different aspects of it.
Well, the book itself was written by my father. My father wrote 4 manuscripts before he passed. We lost my father a few years ago, and it was so. My father was a writer. He was an editor of a Greek American newspaper for many years, and he basically wrote all his life. But he wanted to write these books, so they were always in the back of his mind. And he had written memoirs as well as journals. And what I did was took his short stories and some of his journal works and some of his essays and his memoirs and put them all together into that book called the AJK Anthology, which is exactly what it is. It's an anthology of his works. And he tells his story. It's a bit of a biography, if you wish. He tells his story of his experiences during the Nazi occupation in 1941 of the island of Crete as a young man. And seeing what was happening around him. And in particular, there was one particular story that he would always tell us, and that was with me since I was a child, was how he survived an execution. In 1941, when the island of Crete was invaded, it was invaded by paratroopers, and they dropped into areas by the airport. And my father and his family lived very close to the airport. And because they were dropping bombs as well, they were in the basement of their home. And in the house had basically a door that went out into a courtyard, a beautiful home, actually. And he grew up in this home with a loving family. And my grandmother was active as a nurse in the community, as well as a friend. She had a friend that she had that over that, and they were all there trying to avoid being, you know, with the bombs, but trying to be safe. And anyway, one of the paratroopers fell into their courtyard, and he had been shot by rebels that were shooting, well, the paratroopers that were coming down. He was a young German lieutenant, and he was shot. He fell into this courtyard. My grandmother and her friend rushed to his assistance, brought him into the basement, and healed him, basically. And he was there for a few days until he was better, and they basically kept him safe from the rebels because they didn't want anybody to hurt him further. It was a young man, and they wanted to make sure he was going to be okay, regardless of the fact that he was indeed an invader, if you wish. Anyway, so long story short, he gave them a piece of paper that said that he was forever grateful, and if they ever needed anything, he would help out. And he gave that to my grandfather. And this particular day when the invasion took place, a couple of days later, they started invading some of the villages in the hills, and they invaded a particular village where my uncle and my father were with her cousins, had gone to a visit. And long story short, my cousins at the time, friends of my father and his brother, were placed on a line to be executed, because the policy was for everyone German soldier that was killed, they would kill 20 Greek young men between the ages of 18 and 35. And they put them on the line to be executed. And my grandfather heard this was going on. He made his way to the village, and he had the letter in German from this lieutenant, and he saw the lieutenant in the distance, and he came running to him and told him that his sons were on the line. The lieutenant recognized my father and my uncle, and basically he insisted to the commandant to take them off the line and to keep them safe. And it was a very difficult time because the cousins were asking for assistance, and my grandfather tried to take as many cousins as possible off the line. And other young men that knew my parents, my grandparents, he tried to take as much as he could, but he only was able to take six, and he was worried that he would then lose his, you know, they would not allow him to even take his own sons. So ultimately, as they left the village, they heard the guns, and they knew that the rest of the young men were being assassinated, executed.
The story is unbelievable, Catherine, particularly the synchronicity of it, the act of a good deed that was repaid within that lifetime. And, you know, you could say it's karmic, you could say it's fate, you could say it's destiny, you can say because someone did such an honorable thing for someone's life that the divine powers above, you know, decided to do a karmic good deed back. You know, boy, if there's anything that proves that what you do unto those that suffer, it will come back. It'll come back,
absolutely.
You know, and not that you do it for that. You do it unselfishly, but that, you know, definitely, you know, the point of it is that we are here to serve others, and not just to set up our own life. There is so much more greater than just being your own self, and there are those of us that believe in a multitude of lifetimes and the karmic acts and getting your deeds done. From the heart and finding meaning to your life. And, you know, that old saying, they all come, what goes around comes around, what you do, you know, is
makes
paid back.
Yeah, it does. I mean, my grandmother saw that young man as a young man. She didn't see him as a German soldier. And even though they were invading, to her, he was a young man who was hurt, and she had to do something to save his life. And they did save his life. And by saving his life, she landed up indirectly saving the life of her sons, her two sons.
What a beautiful story. Yeah. And maybe this is a lesson that other people need to hear in this day and age, you know, to do some things out of a humanist approach rather than looking at things in such a negative way, you know, and what's in it for me. And there were so many beautiful lessons and stories within that anthology, even in terms of your dad as a child and his life and the different circumstances in his life. And it was really so beautifully played out, again, in all different avenues, not just one. And you also managed to acquire the photographs.
Yeah, that's what
I found
out. That
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, the
photographs.
They came from a vault in Berlin, and in I think sometime in the 80s, I believe, they opened up the vault and found all these photos because it was required by the commandants to actually take pictures of all executions, of all invasions. They had to take pictures and basically document everything that was going on. And they were sent to Berlin and placed in the vault. And the only one that basically accessed it was Hitler. And this was his way of knowing that his troops were doing what they were supposed to be doing. And when they opened the vault, they basically sent all the pictures back to the countries that had been invaded at that time. And they went to the island of Crete, and then from Crete they were sent to the United States to my father. So he had the original photos. And in one of those photos, you'll see my father and my uncle sitting there on the line waiting, not knowing what was going to happen to them. Because there was not a lot of communication at the time because of the invasion. And even though there was executions in other villages, that particular village hadn't heard yet of the execution. So when
it
they
was
gathered
not the day of
men,
the internet. That's right, Catherine.
Yeah, they had
most
no clue.
Definitely.
And when they gathered these young men, they had no reason why they were on the line. They were there.
Wow.
And, you know, and the parent, you know, the parents, when they realized what was happening, were trying desperately to pull their children off the line, but they wouldn't allow them. And they'd execute them. They executed them. So anyway, so that's that book. And it was a pleasure being able to put that together for my father.
Beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful book in so many ways. Now, The Price of Passion.
Now, that's an interesting one.
It drew me, Catherine, because it was so different. And as
yeah.
you say, it is not unlike a Greek tragedy, but written with a purpose.
Yeah. It was,
tell us a little bit about that, the background.
Well, my father actually wanted to write a story about a very unusual, how can I put it, relationship. It's a story of two people that technically should be in a trusting and meaningful relationship because they're married, but somehow, some way, they ended up in a dysfunctional marriage, which led to the destruction of the family, and it was really a combination of jealousy, sort of an excessive need by one member of the couple to control, and the other, infidelity. So it was basically human weaknesses and behaviors that led ultimately to the tragedy that occurred in this particular family. And my father sort of always wanted to write something different, and that's what this book was about. A different story of a tragic relationship, a dysfunctional marriage leading to the destruction of the family. And
but it was so well done, Catherine, because I was so intrigued because it starts with the prologue and it has seven chapters that detail Peter's life,
yeah.
his birth,
yeah.
Peter
yeah.
as a young man, his business
Correct.
Success, his family life, the return of temptation, first love reignited, and then Peter and Helen's final chapter. It goes full circle.
Yeah.
And I will mention and say, I probably shouldn't, but I'm not going to say too much because I don't want to ruin it for those who have not read the book. The prologue is so important. That's all I can
absolutely.
Say. Prologues are just a few pages, but those few pages are going to pop up in your mind as you read every chapter. Like, why was that put there? And it is not until you get to the end of the story that you fully understand why that prologue was so important. And it really does pique your interest. I have to say, when I read the prologue, I was like, this is very interesting. And why was this put here? And what was the importance, the aspects of this? And as I say, I don't want to say too much because if I do, I'm giving away how this book flows. But again, it just gets into this gentleman's life. And as I'm reading it, I'm thinking about the decades that we go through and how our priorities change. And you know, where our emphasis is put in terms of, is it emotion? Is it the drive of success in business? You know, is it the family? And what it is, it's everything. But it just happens, the priorities change within each different stage of life as a man and as a woman. So I found it so fascinating because I'm saying, well, yeah, I remember at this point in her life, or I remember certain people that were going through that. And I'm sure that as our listeners, you know, purchase the book and read it, they're going to see aspects of themselves or people that they know in the different decades. But not only is the story being told, the descriptions, again, now here we go, the descriptive aspect of the stories the different things that go on in each decade and all the circumstances that go on just pull you right into it. And I love the way you get into the background. Now, there's a paragraph here. I thought it was so great. It says, it's spring and the sun is warm. The sky is uniform blue. Astoria Park is situated at the foot of the beautiful Triborough Bridge and is a 60-acre public park in the Astoria neighborhood of Queens in New York City. And already you're laying the groundwork and you're there and you can, it's so sensory. And it talks about the bridge being well-traveled and recognized thoroughfare between Astoria and the Bronx. You really get into it. You know, the description is laid out. You go through the Triborough and the Hellgate Bridges, respectively pass over the park's southern and northern sections. The park lies in a hill that gently travels down to a waterway known as the East River, with boats and speedboats traversing it. At the edges along the blanket of green, you can find trees and flowers and benches for the weary. Rest for the bodies of the many passers-by and neighbors, a magical, vivid, and invaluable image that alternated its colors from day to night. How beautiful is that? It's setting the stage that you are so captivated. You're there. You're there. I really was impressed with these aspects of the book in terms of laying the location down like a painting, talking about the descriptions of him as he's young, as he's older, his interactions with different people, the temptations in his life that come and go. I found that fascinating because as we're reading the book, Catherine, you start to wonder, well, how is he going to deal with this conflict that exists within this relationship? And it's like the waves of an ocean, the ebb and flow. Still, they loved each other and did not leave, but I just found it so interesting how it never really, it just comes and it goes. And yeah. I was looking for resolution, and there is a type of resolution. There's always some type of resolution in life. It just depends on the circumstances.
I mean, part of the problem with this, with Peter, the protagonist, is that he was at a disadvantage, because he loved somebody very deeply but wasn't allowed because of the choices of his parents to follow that love and to marry the young woman that he loved. That wasn't allowed. And with time, he did marry. He did have a family, but it wasn't truly what he wanted in his heart. And then when Anthea returns years later and that love comes back again, he now has a dilemma. He doesn't know what to do. And he's got this tragic flaw fundamentally where he cannot make a choice. And not being able to make a choice brings him to the final chapter, if you wish.
Right, right. And she as well has this dilemma with this flaw, which adds to this conflict all the time between them that they can't seem to resolve. Just amazing. And I will say to our listeners, as you read this book, you know, it's like a storm and a calm. Storm and a calm. And it's just something that never gets resolved because they're talking around it all the time rather than dealing with it like in therapy or just talking around it with emotion.
Correct.
Dealing with the fact that there is this inherent quality within themselves. Two separate characteristics that they both have that they cannot resolve, they cannot keep hidden.
I mean, his behavior brings out jealousy in her, and she has this excessive need for control, which adds to the jealousy. And it's that sense of that need for control and the jealousy that then pushes him back out to be unfaithful. And it's just my father uses this one thing. He uses a boat in the ocean as it ebbs and flows, and kind of shows how the relationship goes in and out constantly throughout their life together. How one minute they seem to be in love and they seem to be on the same page, but then 2 minutes later they're no longer on the same page and they're antagonistic towards each other. And it's kind of that back and forth that he paints. It's my father loved to paint, and sometimes in his writings he tends to use that.
So there comes the imaging, definitely.
The imagery that you would have as a painter, you know, in your mind. And that's exactly what he does with his writings. I did add some content to The Price of Passion, and I think it's funny because the paragraph that you read is the paragraph I added.
Really?
I thought, oh, gee, okay, that's nice. I did add some content because I wanted to bring out a little bit more imagery, and I know that's what he loves. He loved imagery, but it's a beautifully written story about two people that just could not resolve their relationship, and that to me in itself is a tragedy.
Yeah.
Definitely a Greek tragedy in many ways. So
most definitely. And it's also not just their relationship, but just watching him, again, as I said before, watching him go through the different decades and having this one particular issue always pop up for him. You know, he thought, he worked it out of his system, but something comes along, you know, to turn his, and it wasn't that he loved these other people. It was, you know, just this fascination and obsession. And almost,
right.
I'd say, the fascination and obsession with beauty.
Yes.
Because it's always something so beautiful that turns his head. And I really can't get into too much of it because I don't want to ruin it for the readers, but it's just so interesting. And he says, well, maybe if I do this or maybe if I do that. And then going back and forth, again, between emotion and passion, you know, what I want at this given moment to, is this what I want in the long term? You know, is this the how I'm going to live my life, or is this just something that's exciting me right now? And her being aware of it, and as you say, you know, being obsessed with jealousy to the point of, like, looking for it even before it happens.
Right. I mean, they lived in a prison together, both of them. A prison of their own making.
A lifelong sentence.
Yeah, it's like I said, he has this imagery that I love about him. He's got a third book that I'm going to be working on, the manuscript, and it's called Captain Nicholas Remembers. And I can't wait until I do that, because my father's biggest love, from his first book, you could tell that his largest love was the sea.
The sea, most definitely,
yeah.
Most definitely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He talked about it, you know, when he first opened his eyes and saw it, he fell totally in love with her, meaning the sea. And
right.
He always dreamt of being a captain on a boat and basically being on the sea all the time. And I can't wait until I get into that book and start working with it, the manuscript, and developing it and creating his final manuscript into a book. So that's my next project. Come
from. Wow. Okay, so that you'll start in the summer. And
yeah.
there's no timeline because there's so much editing when you would tend to put this out. The process when you start doing this writing, of course, it's different when you're doing your father's manuscripts and you're
correct.
Translating. And
yeah.
From your other books, you know, your written books, the editing process. Going over it. How many times do you have to go over it? I'm curious.
Oh. Quite a bit. I mean, from the point of view that you're talking about making sure that it's grammatically correct, it's, you
sure.
know, you're working with the publisher on the editing to make sure that if they make any changes, corrections, it's what you want to say. You don't want to lose the meaning of your sentences. Sometimes I'll write sentences in such a way that I want to emphasize certain words, and editing could actually take that away. So I'm very, very much on top of it. So I will read it thoroughly, even those 586 pages of my third book in Josette. I would read it. I'll read it thoroughly multiple times to make sure it's exactly what I want at the end.
And you're dealing with your own self-editing, and then when you hand it to the publisher, you're dealing with their editing. So, you know, it's like you're your own critic, and then it's got to be very hard when they start to edit it, because, as you say, you have certain intent when you're writing, and sometimes changing a word will alter the feeling or meaning or what comes afterwards.
Exactly.
So that has to be so difficult.
Well, I'm very particular. I choose my words because this, again, it's the image. It's what you're trying. You want the reader to see that, see what the image that you're thinking of. You want to translate that to the, transport that to the reader. And you can't do that unless you have it in those words the reader's reading. So changing that changes the meaning, changes the story. And I'm very much sort of detail-oriented to make sure that this is the message I want to have said. This is what I want this protagonist to experience. This is what I want the protagonist to be. This is the behaviors I want them to exhibit. All of those things have to be clearly given to the reader for them to be able to immerse themselves ultimately in the story. It's part of the writing. You know, they have to. You want to engage them. You want to immerse them as a reader and invest them in the characters and the story of those characters.
Most
and
definitely.
And you do it through those words, the choice of your words. So
that
becomes an important aspect, which is what one of the biggest concern when my father first wrote his manuscripts. He wrote them in Greek because that was the language he was most comfortable with. He spoke fluent English, but he wrote the manuscripts in Greek. And he tried at one point to give it to somebody to translate it, and they did a translation of verbatimly, if that makes any sense. And it just did not work. And my father was so upset by the translation that he asked me to do it because I'm a writer and I'm going to write it from his perspective. I know how he thought. I know how he saw his characters, and I was able to do that. And the idea here is, you know, it's not just words. It's the choice of the words. And you have to be...
Most definitely. Most definitely. And I love books more so than movies because you become the artist. But the author presents things to you and describes them, and you as the reader paints the picture. And it can be very disappointing when you go to the movies and see, you know, how the movie's done. But this is something I wanted to bring up, too. I thought it was so interesting. You know, we talked about, you know, the book Josette and Daniel and their own perspective and the story, you know, from their perspective, and about the other story, the Josette and Daniel together, the third book. It is an overview of their whole life. Now, I'm going to read this paragraph, and I know people are going to get what I'm talking about. His heart opens to his guests. Her heart closed to her guests. In the evening, all together at the table where Peter made dinner, Helen had a headache and went to lie down. It seems to Helen that her misfortunate fate follows her everywhere, and there is no peace. She was happy when she went to see Peter's godparents. Her days in California were always sunny. The cloudy sky had cleared and remained clear until her return to Astoria. Especially today, black, dark clouds were blown by the wind from a distant land, Cyprus. The dark clouds encompass her soul. What was to be a warm and loving holiday is now a black Christmas in her heart. And again, you painted such a beautiful description in the sense that we see it all. We understand. But we also see the difference in the perspective. These guests came, and I'm not going to go into the details here because it will spoil the story, but he saw it one way, and there was excitement upon seeing this guest, these guests for a reason. She saw it in a completely different way.
Yeah.
And where he had joy and excitement, she was totally miserable.
Yeah,
totally miserable.
Her life was difficult because in some ways it was how she saw her life. She just couldn't see it any other way.
Right.
It was always black for her. And for him, he was always looking for the positive because that was what made him happy. But she was miserable because she always saw the negative. And they just looked at the same situation totally different.
Completely different. And yes, there were two major flaws, but they just could not get past their own, her with her perspective, and just saw this one aspect of him and was looking for it all the time. And him with like why am I having this issue here, you know, with this, and trying hard not to have it happen again. So, yeah, really, really interesting and nice to see the two comparisons and the two different perspectives within the same paragraph. You know, I found that really interesting, and that made me want to read it continually because I wanted to know how they both saw the same situation and where was it going to go.
Well, thank you.
Totally enjoyable. Now, people can find out more about the books because you have something called the Author's Corner. Your website, which you will give us the contact information in a while, but you have websites where you get into the Author's Corner and you talk about different aspects of readings and Victorians creating the modern novel. I love this, the 32 most iconic poems in the English language. You talk about the poems that you really like. There are author spotlights.
The whole purpose of the website was originally so that I can put my books on the website. That was the original intention. But I love reading, and I love sort of talking about some of the things that I've read. And I decided to create the concept of the Author's Corner, which allows me to be able to write about books that I like or poems that I like and share that with my readers. And that was the whole idea behind it.
And I love that because that is like brainstorming. You know, I'll do that with other artists and other with musicians and love to have things brought to my attention to read. And one thing I found interesting on there is one of the aspects in the Author's Corner, you have the story of Viktor Frankl by Maria Popova. I love Maria Popova. Love her. She has a most fantastic newsletter. It is unbelievable. I subscribe to it. I love it. And basically what she does, the newsletter has different concepts, and she ties different artists, writers, and different concepts, and ties them all in, weaves them like a tapestry. Absolutely beautiful. I'm looking right now if I can find it, and I think it's called The Marginalian. I'm going to look right now. She changed the name. And, of course, now
I love her book. The story of Viktor Frankl is a beautiful story, well-written.
I have to read it now because I just love her writing. And I'm looking through all my emails now, and it was just not coming up. I'm trying to search for it. And I'm pretty sure it's called The Marginalian. It had a different name before, but it is her particular newsletter. She compiles all her writings together, and it is just unbelievable. I look for it. It's midweek. It comes every midweek, and I'm going to have to forward it to you, so maybe you could put that on with your page. I know you definitely will want to read it, because it is just amazing. Anybody can subscribe to it. You can forward it to someone else. She is an amazing writer, and amazing how she compiles all of these different pieces. So from different authors, here it is. The Marginalian by Maria Popova, Midweek Pick-Me-Up. And here this one was Borges on Turning Trauma, Misfortune, and Humiliation into Raw Material for Creativity. And she's just an amazing woman, how she puts things together. She looks for no money. She just puts these things in such a beautiful arrangement that it could be poetry, then she adds the art. It's just amazing. So I'm definitely going to send it to you, and I'm going to also forward it to Hercules as well for his listeners.
Yeah.
Amazing. And then you also have other blogs and areas. It's not just the Author's Corner. Tell us about the other ones, because they're interesting.
One is a personal favorite of mine. I love astrophysics. I mean, my background is physics, and I at one point in my life thought I'd go into astrophysics. And basically, I love anything on the cosmos. So you're talking about from nebulas to galaxies to planets, and all of that stuff, it amazes me. And I've been monitoring a lot of the James Webb Telescope images, and I've been putting them on in that corner. It's called, I'm trying to...
On Stay in Space.
Yes.
I love it.
And it's basically just that. It's allowing, sort of updating about what's going on around us in this cosmos. And it's called This Day in Space. And it just touches upon beautiful images that are out there that we can see now with these beautiful tools brought to us by the web, such as the Webb Telescope.
Amazing.
So that's
talk
kind
about
of my,
high
like,
resolution.
My personal love.
Right, and things that we've never seen before. And I all my emails that I get in terms of I love astronomy, and I love anything to do with space. And there's so many great websites for it. And all these learned scientists, you know, they're just gasping with delight with the results from James Webb Telescope. Oh.
You would like this one. One of the articles that I wrote about was called The Multiverse. And it's about, they've now believe they have evidence that it does, that multiverses do exist. And the concept of having a similar world out there like ours, but in a different point in time, if you wish, a different timeline, it's an incredible thought. And there's a movie actually that just got the Academy Award, which is, I believe, is called Everywhere, Everything, All at Once.
Yeah, the multiverse of everything,
anymore.
Everywhere, all at once.
Yeah,
yes.
At once, that's right. And it addresses that whole idea of multiverses and how our existence is different at each of these universes, if you wish. So
I just find it amazing, because now we're seeing merging of the metaphysical concepts with scientific concepts. And I love them when we see that nothing is just white and black. There are so many different
shades
aspects.
Of gray. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yes. It's amazing. I noticed that on there when I went to the blog to look, because for me as an actual visual artist, to me, it's just amazing to see these pictures. It's just, and it's science, and it's visual, it's logical, it's factual, but it's aesthetically, emotionally beautiful.
And the other thing I've added is short stories. That's a new section I've added to the website, because I've written over 65 short stories and in the past 2 years, I guess. And
whoa.
I've added those in there. And I decided that I'm going to create an anthology of my own. That's my next book, actually, of my short stories. But I put some of those already on the website.
I see that. One is called Time's Past, and the other one is Patient Zero. And I definitely want to read the Time Past one immediately because that sounds so fascinating to me.
That's a mystery. Okay, Time's Past is a mystery.
Okay.
Patient Zero is actually, I guess, kind of science fiction almost. So the genre of these of the short stories are very different than my books, actually.
Wow.
They're, you know, I tend to write, I love science fiction, I love mysteries, criminology is involved, crime, I guess, novels, short stories, so romance, not so much, believe it or not, in my short stories. And there's some essays, too, that are going to be in the anthology, so that's coming out, let's see, I'm working on the last bit of it, and that shit could be coming out this summer.
Wow. Well, how fascinating, Senator. Here's more for me to read. I'm very excited about this.
It keeps me busy. I love writing, and it's sort of like a
Catherine,
sort of,
it's stimulating. It's stimulating to write and put these words into, you know, actually put these pictures and concepts into and memories. I would say that there's some of them are memories embedded in our DNA, and they come out into these stories. So it's exciting to create them, but it's just exciting, as exciting for those of us who read them.
Well, I hope so. You know, the funniest thing is that I'm starting, you know, I've been getting reviews of my books that are out there, Josette, Daniel, and I just got a review from the brand new one this today, actually. This is the Josette and Daniel. And if you don't mind, can I read you the review a second?
Yes, because please do.
It's the funniest thing. Listening to what readers are telling me, it just feels, it's a wonderful experience. That's all I can say. This is written by a gentleman by the name of Sean Dalwett. I think I'm allowed to say his name. It's on Amazon already. It's a verified purchase on Amazon. And what he wrote is, this book is the third installment in a sweet contemporary romance series that follows the story of Josette and Daniel, two musicians who met at the Juilliard School and fall deeply in love. The story is told through the eyes of Josette, a 95-year-old woman looking back on her life. The memory triggers thoughts of her past and her relationship with Daniel, which began when they were both students at Juilliard. The author does an excellent job of portraying Josette and Daniel's deep love and connection. They spend a lifetime together, loving each other and being there for their family. Their relationship blossoms over the 4 years they spend together. And although they are separated upon Josette's graduation, they eventually find their way back to each other. Overall, the story of Josette and Daniel is a beautiful tale of love, loss, and the enduring power of relationships. The author's writing style is engaging and immersive, making it easier for the reader to become invested in the characters and in their story. I recommend this book to anyone looking for a heartwarming and emotional read. It just makes you feel that maybe your books are helping the reader see what you see. And that's what I love this particular. I mean, there have been other reviews that are beautiful, but there was something about this particular review.
I just was reading them. Now, if someone wants to place a review on one of your books, where can they do it? Is it just Amazon or are there other places?
You have a minute left, ladies.
You could do Amazon
at the end?
Yeah, we have a minute left.
We should say how people can contact you. We should. And then this way, Hercules can also put that information down, too.
Yeah, the books are on multiple platforms. They're on Kobo. They're on Apple Books. They're on Barnes & Noble's, all the books, all three books. And
okay.
I'm working also on my father's books and getting them all those platforms. So you can leave it on Goodreads, BookBub, Amazon, all of those places.
Wonderful. And I know Broad Street, the bookstore in Branchville
yeah.
has your books. They have it in the author's corner. And like from the publisher, too, Dorrance Publishing, because I purchased it that way as well.
Correct. And also Sparta Books carries them as well, which is the local
yes,
bookstore.
Yes, I prompted them to do that the last time. I said, what, you don't carry her? And she's from the area?
Anyway, I'm sorry I didn't mean to keep you so long, but they are available on multiple platforms right now, and
that's wonderful.
And if you go onto my website and into the books page, you can see all the platforms the books are located on. And
Catherine Kurkidis, author.com. There you go.
Thank you, ladies, and an excellent show.
Hercules, you have to get along for the science fiction.
Thank you.
Sure.
It's been a privilege to be on your show. Thank you.
Be well.
And a pleasure as always, Catherine. Always.
Same here.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Pleasure.